Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Charlie Cook of National Review. And for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. We start with the good, and I think for the first time in the history of the Three Martini Lunch, we begin with country music. This was at the Country Music Awards last night, the CMAs, and it was hosted by artist Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood. And as hosts do at these award shows, they do different bits. And here's how it started. It was a reference to twerking, which is something that happened at a very different award show a little bit earlier in the year. And it turned into a very funny slam on Obamacare.
Brad, what's wrong?
I twerked my back.
I think I need to see a doctor.
Hey, do you have that Obamacare?
Obamacare? What's that?
I started signing up last Thursday, and I'm almost done. Let's go to the website and get you signed up.
Oh, okay.
Can't be too hard, right?
Why is it spinning?
Oh, it does that.
Okay. Why is it smoking?
Maybe we should restart it.
Obamacare by morning.
I'm gonna wind up with hemorrhoids if I sit here till dawn. We'll have cataracts and dementia. Oh, this is getting on my last nerve. Obamacare by morning. Over six people served.
Charlie, I can't think of another secular music award show where you would get that reaction to an Obamacare slam after a bit like that. It tells you that country music is one of the last areas, where, whatever you think of the actual music, that kind of upholds the traditional American approach to things. And it also shows you just how far the Obamacare disaster has seeped into our popular culture.
Well, I think that last point really is the main one. I mean, obviously, country music fans do lean to the right, but it has been a disaster that has been picked up across the board. I mean, Jay Leno and David Letterman have been making jokes, but so has Jon Stewart repeatedly. To have that amount of applause shows you not only that people think that it's funny, but that they know why the jokes are funny. You know, at the end, they say, oh, six people serve. People know that it hasn't worked. This has been a big story. And one of the things that Obama showed us with his election was that culture really matters in politics. If you can turn somebody into an icon, you can turn them into a cultural figure first. Democrats really get this. Then when it comes to the politics of it, it's much easier to win. The old days of having a dry, you know, old white guy going up to the podium for a debate and having a strictly political debate are gone, especially with social media. And you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Obamacare is being mocked by almost everyone. It's being mocked by IT websites. It's being mocked by the Country Music Awards. It's being mocked by Jon Stewart. It's a joke that everybody gets. And that can't be good. That can't be good for the president.
No, not at all. And the song was a parody of Amarillo by Morning by George Strait, a legendary country artist. So he was in the front row and loving every minute of it. Some of the other artists who are a little more liberal, like Faith Hill, Tim McGraw, they didn't seem too thrilled with it. Taylor Swift looked totally baffled, but I don't think that should shock anyone that she would not know what's going on in the world. Anyway, on to the bad martini, martini number two, and staying with Obamacare. This is from the New York Times. The Affordable Care Act is the biggest new health care program in decades, but the Obama administration has ruled that neither the federal insurance exchange nor the federal subsidies paid to insurance companies on behalf of low-income people are federal health care programs. The surprise decision disclosed last week exempts subsidized health insurance from a law that bans rebates, kickbacks, bribes, and certain other financial arrangements in federal health programs, stripping law enforcement of a powerful tool used to fight fraud in other health care programs like Medicare. Sebelius, the secretary of HHS, disclosed her interpretation of the law in a letter to Washington State Democrat Jim McDermott, who had asked for her views. She did not explain the legal rationale for her decision. So basically, Charlie, we know that these other federal health care programs are rife with fraud, Medicare and Medicaid. So the idea that they wouldn't even bother to put those safeguards in place, and in some cases very effective safeguards, is just baffling.
We're living in an age in which words don't mean anything. It goes to the root of our political language. You say, I'm a liberal, so I want to control everything. Well, I'm a conservative, and I want to change a lot. It doesn't really make much sense. And Obamacare has been a perfect example of this right from the beginning. The bizarre court cases over this, for example, in the Supreme Court, well, it wasn't a tax. It couldn't possibly be a tax. And then it's upheld as a tax, so it must be a tax. You have them arguing the same thing in different places, then changing their mind. This is just another example of it. I mean, this is a federal law. This is the biggest expansion of the federal government, the biggest piece of federal social legislation in, well, since 1965. It was passed federally. It's administered federally. The funds are federal. The exchange is federal. The subsidies calculated at the state level are federal, and the Supreme Court had to stop the Medicaid expansion from being too much of a federal takeover. But this isn't a federal law. This isn't a federal program. On what planet is this not a federal program? And yet, when you don't have much regard for process and political language is just something to bend to your will, these are the sort of decisions that you're going to get.
So how does this change if we've already gone this far down into the world where words don't mean anything and what's obvious is no longer obvious? How do you get it back?
Well, the saving grace in some ways, and also the great problem with Obamacare, is that it's not really a law in the traditional sense. It's a series of enabling acts that allow the federal government to control the healthcare market. And allow the executive to control the healthcare market. It's full of the Secretary Schall, the Secretary Schall, the Secretary Schall. So, you know, if you have a Republican administration or you have an administration that doesn't see things in this way, so many of its provisions can just simply be changed. I mean, they can change what is required in the plans, for example. They can change the contraception mandate. And they will be able to change this. This is an executive function. So the hope is that this is a blip in terms of executive power and executive disregard for language and precedent, and that we will be able to return to a world in which if you pass a law, you have to be accountable for it. And if you pass a federal law, it should be treated as a federal law. It's very simple.
Unbelievable. Just absolutely unbelievable. All right. Well, we need some levity badly now. We got some in the beginning with that second martini. Just kind of drain the life out of you with just how ridiculous it is. But to the rescue, Vice President Biden. As everybody knows, Tuesday was election day in many different places. Jim and I yesterday talked about Virginia a lot, as well as New Jersey. New York City elected a new mayor. There's going to be plenty of stories about Bill de Blasio before too long, I'm sure. Up in Boston, Tom Menino, mayor forever, did not seek re-election, and the new guy who won was Martin Walsh. But here's what happened. According to the Boston Globe, Michael Levinson wrote this. Just minutes after the election returns arrived in Boston Tuesday night, Martin Walsh's cell phone rang. It was the Vice President of the United States, Joseph R. Biden, offering his congratulations. You son of a gun, Marty, he thundered. You did it! The only problem was, it was the wrong Marty Walsh. Biden had called the cell phone of Marty Walsh, former aide to U.S. Senator Ted Kennedy, who is now the president of Gateway Public Solutions, a government relations firm in Boston. At this time, this Marty Walsh said he was sitting on the couch with his wife at their home watching the election results on television. Meanwhile, the other Marty Walsh, the one who had just been elected mayor of Boston, was at the Park Plaza Hotel celebrating his victory. Biden not the only one who got the Marty Walsh who actually won wrong. The Ted Kennedy aide also got congratulatory calls from the mayor of Minneapolis and the chairwoman of the DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And Charlie, the craziest thing about this is that nobody's surprised that Biden and Debbie Wasserman Schultz would get this wrong.
Well, it's just such a Biden thing to do. I'm not sure why Debbie Wasserman Schultz still has a job. She's such a horrendous spokesman for the Democratic Party. It really makes me quite depressed about the evident state of the Republican Party to realize that they've kept her in a job. I mean, the Republican Party must be at a low if she's their communications person, because she's not just incompetent, but she's off-putting. And Joe Biden, similarly, I think probably people see him really as being somewhat avuncular. now, but he has for 5 years provided Jonah Goldberg with immense joy. Every single little thing that he does. You know, these situations are inherently funny. There was a really good one in England, I remember, when they wanted to run a story about some IT hacking crisis. And the guy from Dell turned up at about the same time as the guy who was scheduled to speak. And he said, "I'm here for the computer thing." And so they plopped him down in the studio. He didn't quite realize. I imagine he thought he was going to fix one of the computers in the studio. And then they switched on the cameras and said, "Right, well, here we have." And the guy whose name it was, "And what do you think?" And the guy, you can see him sort of physically panic and then think, "Well, I'm on live television. I'd better just talk." So he starts giving his opinion. It's just deeply incoherent. And this thing went viral. Of course, that went viral because it was a one-off. Whereas with Joe Biden now, you almost roll your eyes and you say, "Well, of course Joe Biden called the wrong guy. Of course he did. It would have been news if he called the right guy."
Unbelievable. And, you know, this is a guy who is still kicking around the idea of running in 2016. My guess is he probably won't in the end. I don't know if you have any insights on whether he's going to run. And I'm not sure there'd be much of an Obama mantle left to carry if he does. Charlie, what do you think?
I think he might run. I think he honestly believes that he could be president. And I think you're right. The question for Hillary Clinton, if she runs, will be to what extent can she distance herself from the problems with the Obama administration, and indeed her own problems with Benghazi and so forth. Her approval rating has been dropping. Joe Biden will not be able to extricate himself. So he must be hoping that there's a pretty rapid economic recovery in the next 3 years, and he could run as the George H.W. Bush style candidate, because I think he would be absolutely crushed. And I'm fairly depressed about the electoral future of the Republican Party. But it would be a gift if Joe Biden were an opponent.
Jim's not here today, but I know what he would say here. Joe Biden literally thinks he could be president. Literally. He always throws that in there. Charlie, thanks for pinch hitting today. We'll talk to you later.
Absolutely.
Charlie Cook of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. There will be no Three Martini Lunch podcast tomorrow, but Charlie and I will both be here on Monday. So please join us then for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.